their neighbors and welcome to the Blind Handyman Show. This being show number 232, this 24th day of April, 2008. Certainly nice to have you with us today. We're recording right now at the Little Ranch House Studio, Southwood Drive in Lufkin, Texas. For the next hour, we're going to talk about building, repairing, and maintaining, all, of course, designed with the blind in mind. Our host for the show, none other than Don Patterson.
Yeah, Thomas, how's it going?
I'm doing just fine, Don. Are you Don Shaw?
Yeah, Tom Houston, what's happening today?
Oh, man, beautiful day outside.
Oh, yeah, fine.
It's overcast. What do you mean beautiful day?
Overcast? It's nice out here. I'm in Burke, though. I'm in beautiful downtown Burke.
Yeah.
I was going to say, see, when you surprised me, when you called on me there, I was sort of taken aback because I was looking around to see where you were.
Oh, my fault. Sorry about that.
Sounds like he's right here, though, doesn't he?
Yeah, it sounds like he's right here, but he's not.
Well, if we'd quit telling people that, I could probably get by with it.
All right, starting next week, we're not telling.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, the creator and producer of the Blind Handyman Show, here he is, Bill Parr.
Yeah, well, I like him. What do you think?
Yeah.
All right, listen, we have got our date set for our gathering in October.
Uh-huh.
The October 24th, the Friday, and then October 25th is a Saturday, and then party day Sunday, and we'll all come home with hangovers on Monday.
Yeah.
Be great fun. Our excuse for getting together this year is the recording of the 250th, show 250 of the Blind Handyman series.
Pretty unbelievable, isn't it?
It certainly is.
250. You need to get well, Houston. We can't do this without you.
250 shows. Goodness.
That's amazing. Yep. Who'd ever thought it, huh?
Who'd have thunk it? Right.
Stumbling. I mean, think about all the knowledge we have dispensed throughout. Think of all the problems we've solved for the world.
Oh, yeah. My goodness. It's just unbelievable.
Let's don't talk about that.
Duh.
But, you know, I'll tell you what we have done. The one thing we have done that makes me feel good, I think we've given some blind people who may not have ever thought they could do woodwork or they could do plumbing or they could do that kind of thing, we may have given some of them the impetus to say, well, hell, if those idiots can do it, surely I can.
Yeah, I think so.
And through the list and all of the efforts that Blind Handyman and Blind Like Me have done, a lot of people have met new people, you know, new friends.
Boy, that's true.
Oh, yeah, no question about that.
That's absolutely amazing. The number of people that have come together all over the world, not just the United States, all over the world.
That's right.
Had a house guest from Canada.
I talked to Carrie. Yeah, I did have a house guest, the Levins. You didn't see him, did you?
No, I didn't get to see him. I got to talk to him. But
did he call you?
No, we talked over the
right.
Blind Handyman Show.
Anyway, Carrie Hooper.
He refused my call when I called your house and asked.
Carrie Hooper that I interviewed about 3 years ago, was it visiting Tim Hendel and Deborah Saylor? Remember them? Deborah Saylor?
Well, yeah.
Little piano player?
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Uh-huh.
You know, I didn't think she had too good a time. She said, oh, I had a wonderful time last time.
Oh, I think she did. I think she had a fine time.
I think she's coming back.
Good.
Who is that?
Good. Yeah.
The girl that could play the piano so well.
She really could play.
Absolutamente.
Certainly no John Justice, but, you know, then who is?
No, that's true.
I think she's as good as John Justice. She just hadn't played as many hillbilly bands as he has.
Oh, that's true.
He understood.
You could name it, and Buddy, he'd kick it off.
He understood the nightclub playing a lot better than she did. She's more of a churchy. Anyway, sweetheart, and I think she's coming back.
Do you think there's a chance that
John Justice will come?
Yeah.
I don't know.
He's certainly invited.
We could call him and ask him. I think they'd probably listen. They'd probably hear us. Somebody will tell him that we talked about him. They could. I'd love for him to come. I enjoyed playing with him about as much as anybody I've ever worked with.
That was fun.
Yeah, he's a piano player, and he, of course, she's a Jimmy Rogers fan. Her daddy Deborah Sailor's father was a Jimmy Rogers kind of a guitar.
Yeah, yeah.
Old picker.
And a collector of old radios. Lots of old radios she collected.
Who is it Merle Haggard always calling when he hits, when he's doing a record? The piano player, Markey?
Markey was the piano player. That was the one he was using then. On Think I Just Stay Here and Drink.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's a Markey, and or, boy, or he could rattle them off.
It was
too.
Rainbow Stew, wasn't it?
No, wait a minute. No, I'll just sit right here and drink.
Was it? Come on, yeah. Here. Here goes Markey, or said something about
it. Yeah. Yeah, the only reason I know that is I listened to the CD the other day.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. And,
my goodness, that Merle has recorded a lot of good songs.
Oh, yeah. Merle's getting old.
He's my hero.
If he never wins a race.
Yeah.
All right. Do you have any list mail for us today, sir?
I do indeed, yes, sir. Here's a guy that has a cast iron table saw that hasn't been used for a few years.
Ooh-wee.
It's accumulated a pretty substantial amount of rust on the table.
I bet you it has.
He said, how can I remove the rust and keep it from coming back?
Well, just a regular rust remover things. I don't know how you keep it from coming back. Put it in a controlled, put it in a heated and cooled environment, and it won't rust. You know?
That is true, if you keep it out of the weather. And
what kind of rust remover do they make for stainless steel? All kinds, don't they? I mean, if you went to Ace Hardware, they'd have hundreds of them, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I mean, what you'd really need to do, in my opinion, is steel wool it, you know, brush it, a wire brush or however. Or they may make some solvent that you could put on there, some solution, and then what it really needs is take your blade and cover up the motor and all that and probably paint that top with some Rust-Oleum or something. I can't believe you're saying cast iron, though. Maybe some early steel, but surely not cast iron.
Boy, a cast iron table saw would be immovable.
I mean,
boy, I'm telling you, it does say cast iron.
It'd be a heavy thing, wouldn't it?
It'd be pretty dusty to move around, wouldn't it? You take three or four of us to.
But anyway, you might just buff that down. You know, retract the blade and all that, and that surface would be your main. I mean, just kind of give it a good cleaning, and then. Keep it inside. You know, the biggest thing on tools, a lot of guys that work every day have been known to leave them out, and, you know, the dew and it's what gets them.
Yeah, it'll rust them. If you keep it in a controlled environment, but a cast iron, I can't believe, man, that would be so heavy.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm just wondering, maybe it's just, I mean, I'm not any great authority on table saws, but cast iron, maybe just some kind of steel.
Maybe he doesn't know from cast iron.
Yeah.
But that'd be a monstrous thing to shovel around. Anyway.
Well, it would warp.
It just so happens here I printed a little answer to that.
From who?
The same guy that had the question, I believe. He had,
uh-huh.
He had the answer.
Just Ray Boyce.
Or at least he included the answer in his little post.
All right, we're ready.
It says, well, there are about as many answers to that question as there are woodworkers who have faced the problem. Cast iron tables are great for their weight and durability, but they're quite susceptible to rust, particularly in high humidity climates. The first step is to assess the situation. If the rust is relatively light and superficial, it won't take much to clean up the problem. However, if the rust has been accumulating for a number of years and appears to be substantial and deep, the saw's table is probably too damaged to return to its former glory, so to speak.
Yeah.
That being said, the saw should still be usable. It just may not be as smooth and precise of a surface as when it was new.
Where did he get this answer, I wonder?
It didn't say.
If he had the answer, why in hell did he ask the question?
Is this Ray Boyce again asking questions he can answer?
I don't think this is Ray this time on this particular one. I do have one here from Ray.
Oh, good.
But this particular one, I'm not sure that it was from Ray.
Mm.
Okay, first of all, resist the urge to go after your saw table with sandpaper. Instead, try a Scotch-Brite or a similar synthetic kitchen scrubbing pad, not steel wool, with some mineral oil as lubricant. You want to use a sufficient amount of mineral oil, but don't go to excess. Or rather, as you'll have to wipe off the oil when the scrubbing is done. I've heard of people using WD-40 instead of mineral oil, which should work fine, although it will evaporate more quickly than mineral oil.
And will attract dust.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Should you choose to use the WD-40, apply it often and to the entire salt table to keep it lubricated until you're finished scrubbing. And that's all he has to say about that.
Man, it must be a really ancient table saw if it's stainless steel. I mean,
cast iron.
Must be really, old because they don't, you know. Anyway, go ahead. Next.
Okay, how to calculate concrete required for a job.
We have an expert on that right here, sitting right here with us.
Okay, good. It says, I'd like to build a backyard concrete patio to replace a rotting deck. The patio would be about 18 by 10 feet.
Uh-huh.
How do I figure out how much concrete to order?
Now here's Don Patterson with the answer to that question.
Hey.
Well, actually, there, you know, when you... call the concrete people. I mean, the simplest way, and this is not, I'm not being smart or facetious, as they say, they're going to tell you exactly what you need, and they're not going to try to sell you too much. I mean, that's kind of pointless, but that, the way you would want to figure it is how thick are you going to pour your slab. If you're going to do a 4-inch slab, concrete is sold by the cubic yard, and so you measure 4 inch, 10, it's length times width times height. And and so if you had 10 by 18, that's 180 surface feet, but then you're 4 inches, so 4 inches is a third of a foot, so you're going to have to calculate, I think you divide the 180 or multiply, or divide it by three, I think, and then, which would, then you convert it into cubic yards instead of cubic feet. You would convert it into cubic yards.
Yeah, divide it by three, whatever the feet are, divided by three.
So it's 180 divided by three, which would come out to be 60, I think.
Yeah.
All right, and then you multiply that, let's say, then that's 60 feet, so then you divide that by three again. Or I mean, a cubic yard is 9 cubic feet.
Yeah.
3 by 3 by 3, so 9, I guess you'd divide the 60 by 9. So 9 into 60 would, what, 7 times?
Yeah.
Are we talking roughly, so about 7.5 yards it would be my calculation.
But the concrete guy will tell you. He doesn't want to sell you too much because what's he going to do? Just pour it on your grass? You know, he'll sell you what you need.
Well, yeah, there's no reason to.
But that's basically the way you do it and then form it up. And if you pour a little beam, it also say if we arrived at a prop, if that figure is correct, say 7 point something, go ahead and buy 8 yards and dig you a little 6-inch beam around the outside. And then pour a 4-inch slab in order to last you the rest of your days.
It really ought to. But the thing of it is, you know, I just hire a guy to do it. Find some guy that'll pour something that small. Call the guy and say, I want to pour an 10 by 18 patio. Will you do it? A lot of guys will say, no, we don't do jobs that small.
Well, true, but I think maybe they were just wanting to get a cost. But concrete's, you know, over $100 a yard. It's gone up like everything else. So that little job, and that's fairly small as concrete pouring goes. So I mean, you're talking about $800 or so for concrete right there, not counting your form and your rebarb or your screen mesh that you're going to put down there. So.
Some guy's got to build that form for you. Mm-hmm. So you're going to spend $1,500 on your patio, just the way it is, you know.
Things are going up.
But what if you went to Lowe's? If you wanted to rebuild the old wooden deck with 2x6s.
I'd pour concrete.
I'd pour concrete. I would. Of course, we just built a wooden deck because we had a wooden deck, and we just extended it down some. But, you know, I found out that those walmanized planks lasted a lot longer than the cedar.
Really?
Yes. I didn't think they would, but they outlasted the cedar. You know, the cedar, George rebuilt that. Remember this?
Yeah.
Two years ago.
Yeah, not two.
It would be 3 years ago this spring.
Oh, yeah.
George rebuilt the deck, and it still looks really good. I believe it's going to, of course, what's under the cover there is cedar. But what do we get, 10 years out of it, out of that cedar? Ought to get 20 years out of this womanized. Anyway.
About the only thing this guy added to what Don just said, he said, by the way, if you're doing this yourself, you should also use a gravel or crushed rock base, rebarb reinforcement, and provide an expansion joint against the foundation, and don't forget to slope the slab away from the house.
Yeah, but my goodness, if somebody, he surely doesn't intend to, you couldn't mix enough sacrete to pour. I mean, surely he's going to get a truck there.
You would think so.
And they'll put the gravel. I mean, you tell them what you're doing, and they're going to mix that concrete like it's supposed to be.
Yeah, with the gravel.
And
right,
yeah, most
gravel.
Time they put a, you know, say if that one's 10 feet wide, it's 18, sound like it up at the back of a house or replacing a deck. So you'd want a half-inch fall on from front to back. I don't know if it's going to be covered, but if you want a little fall to get the water off, a half-inch, I'm sure the 10 feet is the width.
Is the house width.
Is the width of the deck versus the 18 feet, probably the length, I would assume. And so,
in 10 feet, you'd a half inch would be
great. Yeah, a half inch would be great. I mean, I did a 20 by 40 and put an inch fall, roughly a little less than an inch from the 20-foot side. So,
and I wonder if he's putting this against a concrete, against a slab or what. It didn't say that.
Well, it did not say, no.
If you do, they make you, a lot of people screw bolts into that, and I think there's even some kind of stuff you can put on the existing slab if you're pouring up against another one, or some people put in a rubber expansion.
You'd want to.
Whatever is your pleasure.
Yeah. But get somebody to do it. Don't try to, you know, this is not something new.
A lot of sacrete.
Well, oh, man. You couldn't do it with sacrete.
I don't see how you could mix. I'd call a truck. The 7 yards is a lot of concrete to handle.
And a lot to trial off. I mean, somebody's got to make that smooth. Somebody's got to decide what kind of finish you want, smooth it off for you. And boy, that's some nice concrete they poured around your pool, isn't it? Up in your pavilion.
Yeah, Albert, guy lives right over here on Allendale. Has poured every slab for me that I've had.
It's just as smooth and slick as it can be.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Anyway, go ahead, Houston.
Okay, here's a guy that says, when I turn on my air conditioner, I smell a very bad odor, like sulfur or rotten eggs. Now, the smell only lasts about 10 minutes when it's first turned on. What causes this, and how can I get rid of it?
I'd say you had some mold growing in your pan.
That's what they say.
I wonder where this person is, because I'm wondering if he's talking about some kind of evaporator system. You know, that happens. Phil and I both have little small hot water heaters that we installed. If I knew now what I know now, if I knew then, I would have gotten a bigger one. But they're 12-gallon. Mine's a little 12-gallon hot water heater. And when you run the hot water for the first 10 or 20 minutes, it stinks to high
heaven. Well, if you don't do it often enough. If you took a bath with that hot water heater, that wouldn't happen.
But and so I don't know if this guy has the – but just a regular air conditioner, yes, I would have someone check that pan immediately.
Or go dump some Clorox in that pan. If you can get to the pan, dump a cup of Clorox in that pan below your air conditioner where the water drains, and I believe you'll solve that problem. I was going to talk about that. That was my filler for the end of the show.
I remember after the hurricane when the electricity was off for three or 4 days, remember the first time I fired up the air conditioner again?
Yeah.
We had water drained back. And that was the weekend when me and John, my brother-in-law, came and borrowed your, that thing that you go down a pipe, that snake thing.
Yep.
Remember? And we cleaned out just bunches of stuff out of that air conditioner drain pipe.
I imagine. They get algae and, you know, just like a swimming pool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You don't treat that water.
So I've been trying to do that. Just pour a little bleach down it every once in a while, maybe at least once or twice a summer.
Yeah, that's the thing to do. The guy told you to put a swimming pool tablet in your pan, Pat?
Yeah, a chlorine tablet. Yeah,
break up a tablet or something.
Yeah, I wouldn't put probably the whole one, but yeah, just
some pieces of a tablet in your.
Yeah.
Let them go.
I guess some granular chlorine would do. Granulated.
Granular chlorine would do fine. Go ahead, Houston. What? You got another one?
Well, no, I had an answer that I printed to that.
All right.
It says most likely the filter and or pan is matted with dust or rotten algae. Changing the filter might get rid of the smell. If a new filter doesn't completely get rid of the problem, then it might be necessary to clean the coils and the pan that collects water. The job is similar to cleaning a bathtub or a sink, so the same household chemicals can be used.
I had something I want to throw in here, too, because we're talking about odors. It's real odd. Emily and I have had, for the last 6 months or 9 months, never-ending vacuum cleaner problems. We're on our fourth vacuum cleaner, and they're all come out from our my favorite store, Sears. They weren't all Kenmore's, but they were something that Sears sold, and we used one and had to take it back in 3 months. They just gave us another one. It crapped out. We took it back. We got one. They said, oh, try this one. This has got... We used it and took it back, so now we have another one. But in the process, they sold us some tablets, little things. He said, every time you change the bag, drop one of these in the bag, and it'll make your carpet smell good.
Yeah.
What if you did that on your air conditioning filter? You know, if that'll work in a vacuum cleaner thing, what if just when you put the...
Boy, if his filter's that screwed up.
No, I know. I'm just thinking, wouldn't that, if it works,
well,
I haven't
I've
tried
heard of
one
spraying
yet.
Your filter with,
yeah, with
air fresheners.
Yeah,
and
air fresheners.
It would work.
Yeah.
They also make a tablet you can put in your garbage disposal.
Yeah.
That makes your sink smell good.
Really?
But what is this? This question wasn't from John Connolly, was it?
No.
The guy never changes a filter.
I think I got him doing it. I went to Conley's house one time, and the filter was sucked in. It was so full. I said, why is it so hot in here? Well, good air conditioner. I'll turn up the air conditioner. Well, it was on 62, and Alan mentioned, what filter?
Yeah.
What filter?
Yeah, boy, when they start asking that.
What filter? Yeah, John Bennett. So I just had another drink of whiskey and hope for the best. But we changed his filter. I think we got him changing him now. He's handyman John Connolly.
Yeah. All right,
Houston Vic. We appreciate you much.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I think you already, you didn't say it, but I think we were 100. I think we were 4 for 4 today.
Oh, you did good.
I think we nuked them. Bring them on, Houston.
Are you working on getting well so you can go to the gathering in October now, aren't you?
Oh, man. I that would be nice if I could.
It'd be wonderful if you could. Well, I'm going to be very sad if you can't.
Well, I'm not planning it, but I'm not planning against it either.
Let me give you some advice, Mr. Houston, if you're coming. Do not pack your beer in with your clothes. It was your costumes. It was your clothing they were after all the time.
We're not going to let that happen again. We're not going to. That's not going to happen.
I will bring the beer.
I will never, ever leave anything in my truck in a parking lot in a hotel. At a hotel in Houston, Texas.
Why we didn't take that in when we took the equipment in, I'll never know.
I just say we'll come back and get it later.
Who's going to bother that old suitcase?
Who wants an intro light?
Oh, if we had left that equipment, we would have been in trouble.
Oh, I wasn't leaving you. I would have stayed with the equipment. Hell, I had several $1,000s worth of guitars there.
You know, Tom, if they had bothered to open that before they made up with it, you'd have probably found another couple of cases of natural light in there.
Probably.
All right, we're going to go and put the guest on, and we thank you, sir. And we'll see you next week.
Okay, buddy.
Come see us, Thomas.
All right.
Yes, sir. See you.
All right, let's do it, Donald. Here we go.
There it is.
Wonderful little noise. All right, let's take a short break and be back with our guest. We're going to talk about repairing and rebuilding Braille writers, believe it or not. Right. I know you'll all be waiting for that, won't you, huh?
There's a lot of Braille writer users out there. You'd be surprised.
More than you'd think. Don Shaw is with us, and Don Patterson's with us. I'm Phil Parr. This show's called The Blind Handyman. We interrupt this program to bring you a special announcement. I don't know what it would be, but surely we do.
I made it back.
You made it, Don made it back, and that's we're glad to hear that. Paul, how are you, sir?
Very good. Yourself?
We're doing well. It's a beautiful day in Lufkin, they tell me. I didn't know that, but pronounce your last name for me.
Certainly. J-A-C-K.
Jack.
A-N-I-N. Jackanin.
Jackanin. Paul Jackanin. And I think you did this show a couple of years ago, didn't you?
It's true. It's true.
It's true. We can't deny it. Can't deny it. It's in the archive.
Lots of new listeners, though, since then. Yeah, lots of new reading radio services.
Lots of people since then. I guess you're still repairing and rebuilding those Braille writers.
I buy Perkins Braillers, I sell them, and I repair them, and I'm having a ball doing it.
Are you really? Right. Where'd you learn to do this? Who taught you that?
A gentleman at Perkins named Leon Murphy, who had been assembling Perkins Braille writers for 43 years, took me under his wing and taught me everything I know. Not everything he knows, everything I know.
So this was maybe your state agency sent you there to learn this? Or
no, my wife indirectly sent me there because many years ago, she's about 5 or 6 years ago, she said to me, can you fix my Perkins Brailler? And I'm pretty handy. And I said, sure. And I took the bottom off it, and I sprayed some WD-40 on that thing, and it worked great for about a week.
I remember you telling me.
Yeah, and then all the oil hardened, and she said, you're in a lot of trouble.
So the dust got on the oil and it...
Yep, the WD-40 just hardened it up and it was like gunk. The WD-40 and of course I didn't know enough then to clean it, so it just all made like a little paste.
Which is exactly, before I knew any better, what I would have done.
Yep.
I remember using it on relays and tape recorders and all kinds of things. Oh. And boy, it'll unstick some.
Oh, it'll work great.
Yeah.
Until it... Like a magnet attracts all the dust in the environment.
And we've learned now, don't spray it in your sliding door track.
That's right. Graphite or...
Yeah.
That's a horrible thing. It just makes like a paste.
It sure does.
So your wife does Braille.
Yes, she does. In fact, she uses... I inherited a Braille writer I got from someone. It's the 212th Braille writer manufactured. It was manufactured in early 1951. She uses that thing every day.
Amazing.
And they put a number on it. I mean, that's how you...
Yeah, they put the serial number in. And then the newer ones now have numbers, but in the very beginning, they numbered them as they came out. And then around 1959, they started putting letters. So A and B and C would represent the year. And then I think around 1993 or 94, they switched back to numbers. They ran all the way up to Z.
So
now they're back to numbers.
So, Paul, are you like the old watchmaker, the old watch repairman? Do you do any work on electric Braillers?
Yes, I do. Electric, jumbo, anything Perkins makes, any Braille writers they make, I repair.
Okay, so in other words, it doesn't go against your grain just because it's electric.
Oh, absolutely not, because the electric one, if you've ever seen one, is exactly a Perkins Braille writer. They just put a solenoid in there and put an outlet. They drill two holes in the side for a switch and a cable.
Right.
And it's an electric.
Well, you know, I mean, obviously us being blind folks are a small part of the population, but do you have enough of this to keep you? I mean, is this a full-time money-making deal here?
No. It's not making a fortune, but I love puzzles.
Okay.
And every Braille writer I work on, and I work on... an average of 25 a week. So it keeps me busy.
It's grand.
And I enjoy it. Everyone is different. Every problem is different.
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, not getting in your business, but you get paid for doing this, so at least a guy could make it worth his while.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's not a fortune, but it keeps me out of trouble.
You're not getting rich doing it, but you're
what
making
a deal.
You know,
25 a week. So goodness, how 50 times 25 if you take 2 weeks off vacation? That's a lot of Braille.
That's a lot of Braillers.
And I enjoy it. I mean, and time has only made me get faster. I look at things now that used to take me hours, and now I can do them pretty quickly.
All right. Yeah. One other question, Paul. If I just bought, if they still make them, I guess, a brand new Perkins Brailler, or I just had one, how long am I going to get to use it if I was a pretty steady user to where I would have to send it to you for some kind of service.
I mean, well, I guess this is a mixed emotion for me because Perkins indirectly is my employer because they make the things I repair. But if you just bought a Perkins Brailler, I would say that's unfortunate.
Okay.
The new Brailers are not anywhere as near as good as the old ones.
Oh.
And in fact, I was there about 3 years ago, and the manager took me in his office, and he said, "We have revolutionized Braille Writers." I said, "How so?" He goes, "We're making them blue, and they're going to be green."
Really?
And I'm thinking to myself, what color are the old ones? The point of the story is, in
That's
the last 3 years, I've probably repaired 50 of the blue and green ones. And that's a sin. That's an absolute tragedy that something 2 years old can need to be repaired.
Okay, so without being facetious, what is wrong with the new ones?
In a word, pride. They used to be assembled by an individual. Those people would make eight Braille Writers a day from scratch.
Uh-huh.
That would be their quota. They would initial them at the bottom. Now they're being made assembly line. Somebody puts one screw in. Somebody puts one spring on. There's no pride. There's no responsibility. And I'm not trashing Perkins. It's unfortunate that it's come to this.
That's just a way of manufacturing for a lot of things.
Because it's cheaper. It's cheaper. And from what I understand, they have gone now from India to China.
Yeah, that's where everything. Can you believe this? The Chinese are making accordions now, for God's sake.
Yes.
I mean,
and it's a sign of the times. Yeah. And again, Perkins is trying to do the best thing they can. But if someone were to buy a Braille Writer and have a choice between buying a 30-year-old refurbished Brailler from me or from anyone, or a brand new one, I would grab an old one any day of the week.
Go with the old one every time.
Right. Now, let me just say, first of all, the opinions expressed on this show are those of Paul Jackanin and not those of the Blind Handyman or our sponsors, which we don't have.
And our sponsors, Perkins Braillers.
Exactly.
No, Paul, let me ask you one question. So if I then bought a refurbished Brailler, back to my original question, and I use it kind of regular, So how long is it? What is it going to need to go back for a tune-up in a couple of years, maybe just a brief cleaning?
If a cover is left on a Braille Writer and it's kept relatively clean, it should go years.
Really?
Without needing any repairs.
So you could be like the Maytag repair guy, right? You could be home alone.
As long as I'm getting 25 a week, I'm happy.
There you go.
Whether I get the same 25 or different 25.
Right.
Now, you have obviously, you set yourself up a shop at your place where you have all the springs and things that Braille Writers need. In little drawers and all organized. You're an organized guy, right?
Well, my other hobby is cabinet making. So I truly have the best of both worlds. I made a cabinet with all the little drawers specific to the size of the parts.
Okay.
I made racks on my walls. So one half of my basement is my woodworking shop. The other half is my Braille Writer repair. So, yes, I have everything organized and in its right place.
If we came to see you and we went down there, you'd be able to show us all your little tools and everything well organized.
Is that you folks outside? Are you outside now?
No. We didn't ask you. Where do you live?
Massachusetts.
In Brooklyn, New York.
Brooklyn. Wow. Yeah.
I would welcome a visit from fellow handy persons as yourself.
Yeah. Well, I think I told you this, the late 90s, we spent a week in New York wandering around. I'll take Manhattan, the Bronx and Staten. It was great. I had great fun.
Great place for a blind person, isn't it?
Oh, that's probably the biggest attraction to my wife and I, that you have public transportation, you know, things are open 24 hours a day.
It'd be the place to live. No question about that.
I love your accent. I want you to hear you go, "Listen, get off my lawn. I'm talking now." We only got one cab driver that yelled at us a little bit.
Well, what kind of, about How old are you?
I'm 54 years old.
Okay.
So you
and I've had this accent for 54 years.
But you don't quite remember when the Dodgers left.
No.
Yeah, everybody in Brooklyn wore a black armband, and they turned off the lights for 3 days in mourning, you know. Yeah, I was a baseball card collector when the Dodgers left. But,
well, I confess I've only recently become a baseball fan because the station I listen to, CBS, covers when the Yankees are playing, they put them on.
Uh-huh.
But I only enjoy, I'm not a very good fan because I only enjoy when the Yankees are up. When they're not up, I turn the radio off.
So you're listening to WCBS 880.
Exactly.
In New York City. Amazing. How does he know that? Anyway.
It must have been that brief visit to New York.
It must have been.
Yeah.
I knew it long before then.
That is just...
I'm an old AM nut.
L-A-A-M.
Oh, I'm an
so
AM.
So then you probably remember WMCA.
I do not.
No, oh my.
No, that wasn't...
That used to be, when I was growing up in the 60s, that was the good guys. The good guys, yeah.
The good guys, where they yeah. played rock and roll?
Oh, yeah. I loved the Beatles, and they played that kind of music, yes.
Yeah. And you loved it.
I did, and a lot of those good guys went to CBS FM.
Yeah. Is there a country FM in New York, a straight country, that plays Garth Brooks and Brad Paisley and George Strait and all those people?
There is, and I don't know the call letters.
Yeah.
The only time I listen to country western is when I'm traveling. I put the radio on, I spin the dial, and I just find the country western music.
Yeah. Well, we like both kind of music, country and western.
Yeah. Oh, is my ignorance showing?
Oh, listen, let's get back to Braille writers.
Okay.
25 a week, and then you build also cabinets. Do you build cabinets for the public? Are you?
Yeah. The Braille writers are consuming more of my time, but yes, I build furniture for, you know, whoever, you know, neighbors will come in or people will hear about it, and they'll come and look at the stuff and describe to me what they want, and I build it.
So do you have a cast iron topped table saw?
I do have a cast iron. It's
cabinet shop.
It's probably 30 inches wide, 34 inches deep.
Wow.
And it's got the two extensions on either side. And to prevent myself from walking into those extensions, I built cabinets underneath them. So there's cabinets surrounding the table saw.
Man, what a sound.
Oh, that would be much better. But now, how do you get, other than, of course, we would think that some people might hear you here, and this is kind of advertising, but how do you get business? How do people know about you?
I advertise in Ziegler, the Forum, the Braille Press, and the word of mouth. I've gotten... Like the committee, having affiliated myself with the commission in New York, somehow from that I have sold to I think 18 other states with, you know, commission sponsored sales of Braille writers.
Okay.
So the commission is probably one of my best customers.
But you can still go. What is Howe Press? Is Howe Press the same thing as
Perkins? Howe Press, Perkins School for the Blind, and then Howe Press is the. I guess the
publishing arm.
Yeah. Well, the place that does the manufacturing.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
But they don't make them in the USA anymore. They make them overseas.
I don't believe so. It's my understanding they used to make them in India, and now they're starting to make them in China.
And I read in one of the magazines, the ACB or NFB magazine, about a big fight that Howe Press got in with somebody else that was buying Braille writers from them and selling them. At a ridiculously low price. Was that, Maxi-Aids?
Maxi-Aids, it was indeed.
Did they settle all that?
I don't know. I only heard about that. From what I understand, Howe Press was selling Braille writers in a third world nation for a reduced price.
Yeah.
And somehow Maxi-Aids got them and then was selling them, you know, at a price less than Howe Press, less than Perkins.
In the United States.
In the United States.
Less than Perkins. They deserve that.
And, of course, that rubbed against the grain.
What we need to do as blind people is try to fight more. You know, we need to quit. We need to quit getting along.
Like we don't have enough of that.
You know, we need to win some of the battles more often to inspire some fighting.
Yeah.
Amen.
If you keep losing, you lose the interest.
You suppose the government's going to change our money? No.
I can't imagine it.
I can't either.
You know, I just can't imagine. I mean, they're whining about how it costs 2 cents to make a penny now. I can't see them changing the size of the bills.
That's not going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen. But, you know, our friend Dan Rossi at Carnegie Mellon University is working on a money identifier that you can use with your cell phone, the camera on your cell phone.
Oh, how interesting.
Which is great.
So, and it's going to be like 30.
Oh, good, a use for the camera.
Yeah, it's like going to be like $25 or $30 to add to your software to your cell phone. So
right.
If you're going to have a talking cell phone with Talks or Mobile Speak, you'll just snap a picture of the bill and it'll say $1.
Oh, that would be an excellent invention.
It's coming. I think they're going to show it at the conventions this summer.
And being affordable. That's just
yeah, exactly.
Just,
I mean, what's that thing they came out with that does the... that reads and does, it's a phone and it color identifier and everything, but it was something like $2,500.
Yeah. That's been the problem.
Yeah, that's a chunk of money no matter how you take it.
Yeah, oh sure, yeah.
No individual can afford one
of those. Yeah, I mean, because it's a gadget. I mean, it's a useful tool and everything, but $2,500. Yeah,
even the Braille writer guy, if he charged $100 a Braille writer for 1 week, he could buy one. Yeah. You're not accepting that at all, huh?
No.
All right.
But it's an idea.
So cabinets and Braille writers. And
correct. And I've been doing it for, the cabinet making for about 35 years. I started when I was real young.
So, Paul, how do you keep having a wood shop / Braille writer shop in your basement?
The front half is my woodworking shop. I have two different dust collection systems.
That was my question.
Yeah,
how do you keep the dust away from the Braille writer?
I have two. The ones I use are, they're called, the brand is Fine. And the beauty of them is the shop vacs are so incredibly quiet.
Yeah. Because when you sawed some LPS in your shop, you'd have to get rid of that dust.
Oh, absolutely. I try to avoid that stuff.
So, Paul, here again, do you live in an individual house or a multi-family type?
I don't know how to answer that. It's a three-family home. My wife and I occupy the first and second floor. My mother-in-law lives on the third.
Okay.
So I think it's a one-family.
Yeah, okay. So, in other words, the basement, and you don't care if you make a little noise.
Oh, no. Okay. I sleep with the owner.
I'm interested in...
Well, now there's a concept.
I'm interested, like you talked about, the dust collecting, because that would have been, I mean, having the Braille writer repair and the woodwork is almost like doing something and then having a sandblasting operation.
Seem contradictory, but people have walked into the back area and seen my work area where the Braille writers are, and many people have said to me, that's cleaner than my dining room table.
Yeah.
I have a metal surface. A lot of my things are, I put magnets on the bottom, so that's what keeps the stuff in place. When I'm all through at the end of the day, I spray it with alcohol, I scrub it clean, and ready for the next day.
That's great.
And I would be, I don't know this, but I would be willing to bet that in that basement are a nice set of stereo speakers.
There are 5 speakers in the wall in my basement, 2 face me.
And
two are in back of me, though 3 are in back of me, and 2 face me, and I enjoy my music.
Do you have surround sound or just 5?
Just 5 speakers.
Just happen to have 5
speakers. I just broke it up into, so it's not surround sound.
And so you keep the music going all the time while you're down there?
I'm quiet. It's in the background. And when I turn it off when I want to hear if a little spring or washer are going to fall out when I shake a Braille writer.
That would be really important.
And I guess the beer fridge is not far.
Well, there is a fridge. There's a fridge right in my basement. I have a sink and a little under-the-counter fridge.
Ah, that under-the-counter's great. Yeah.
Well, we got to come back to New York and come out and see your operation.
I would love that. Would be a truly an opportunity, folks.
Because I don't know when I've enjoyed myself more than just we. Of course, we walked everywhere and we rode the subway. We rode the Staten Island ferry and tried to do everything you can do in a week in New York. And ate at Carnegie Deli. The biggest corned beef sandwich I've ever seen in my life.
Talk about a two-handed sandwich.
I could still be eating on it if I brought it with me. It was huge.
Wow.
And this has been several years ago. Well, all right. Give us your contact information.
Certainly.
If anyone wants to get a hold of you for a Braille writer repair or just to talk to you and shoot the breeze. How about
that? My phone number, cell phone number is 718-749-3774.
And that phone is in your pocket all the time.
Oh, yes, it is.
You have talking. You have one of the one
email.
Of the,
do you have email?
Do you have a talking cell phone?
Yes, I do. So it's truly a blessing.
Yeah,
I have email. My email address is pjackinen@nyc.rr.com.
All right, you better spell your last name one more time for us.
Pjackinen, J-A-C-K-A-N-I-N.
Okay, the reason why also, the one question we didn't mention, if you were going to buy a new Perkins, which you've already told us the downside of that, versus a refurbished from Paul Jackinen, if I were going to point some school districts in your direction, what are they going to say? What's the benefit?
A savings of a little over 100%. Perkins now gets, I believe, $700 for a brand-new Braille writer.
Wow.
I charge $325 for a refurbished old Braille writer that works excellently.
All right.
What a deal.
And you give a guy a guarantee that that's
I'll give them the same warranty, the same guarantee that Perkins gives. I'll give them 90-day warranty, and I have only had one person who's bought a Braille writer, and I've probably sold about 60 in the years I've been doing this. One person called me up about a year later and said, my Braille writer is not working. I said, send it to me. If it's my problem, I'll fix it free of charge. It wasn't my problem, but it was such a simple problem. I fixed it and just mailed it back to them.
What a guy. What a guy.
Yeah. Do you mail most of this stuff free matter?
No, I don't.
Yeah.
Free matter is uninsured, and you end up spending about $8 to insure it. I spend, well, now I used to spend $15, but now it's probably up to about $20 to UPS. I insure it, and it gets pretty much anywhere in the country in 4 to 5 days.
Could you not send that by media mail and get insured with the post office? It's cheap. It's the way you send books and or via.
That's the problem.
Tapes.
Only books or tapes. That's the exception.
That could be considered media. I think somebody could argue that point.
Oh, that's it. But then you know what? Then I have to bring it to the post office.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. I mean, this way I call UPS up. Boom, they come pick up the boxes.
They come and
get work.
Don't change, Paul. Never quit a winner.
It's working so far.
Do you have a minimum charge if someone has a Braille? I've got a Braille writer I want to send to you. I want to send it to you. Surely you have a minimum charge.
Yeah, it's $65 for a cleaning.
Plus shipping,
plus return shipping. I mean, they can ship it to me however they want. When I ship it back, I usually tack on like $20 return shipping. So it's $65, and that probably covers 75% of repairs. The other two basic repairs that I quote someone, if it's an older Braille writer before 1987, they use the old pressure rollers, and that's usually the first thing to go. The paper slips and slides in the brailler. That's $55, and that's pretty much self-evident if they tell me the paper is slipping around. And the third general part that I replace often is the mainspring, and that's $22.
All right.
And that's if the carriage won't go from left to right or is very sluggish.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't always need to be replaced, but oftentimes that's usually the only – those are the parts I quote because those are the most common ones.
Yeah.
All right, Paul, we like Wheeler dealers. If I have a pre-1987 Brailler, it's given me all these problems, and I want to move up to one of your 1988 refurbished jobbers. Do you take trades?
I do take trade-ins, but I'm sorry if I gave you that impression. Most of the Braille writers I have are probably from the mid-70s, late 60s, 70s, 80s. I have a couple of new ones. In fact, I had a woman mail me a three-year-old Braille writer. She said, give me a trade-in. These keys are too hard to press. I want an old one.
Wow.
She got the old one from me, and she said, I'm back to where I want to be.
Yeah.
But the old ones, the keys press so much easier.
Yeah. Okay.
That's amazing.
It is.
That's amazing. You own a Braille writer, Shaw, don't you?
Yeah, but it's a, I think it's a, it's not a Perkins. I think it's a, it might be a Hall. It was before, I mean, really old.
Is there another kind?
I'm sorry?
Is there another kind but Perkins?
Well, not Perkins. Pretty much cornered the market in 51 when they started, but I think the Hall was a popular Braille writer, and the other one was the Lavender.
This one was made, I think, I looked it up one time at the NFB, some Braille writer museum or something. I think it was made in about 40, 41 or 2.
Yeah, the Halls. Well, when I was in school, that the Halls were around.
Who holds the patent? Who did the first one?
Well, the guy who developed it was Abrams. I'm embarrassed to say. I don't remember his name. It says right on the Braille writer, too. Abrams, I think. And he developed it. He actually had it developed in 1939.
Ah, okay.
But then with the war, they needed all the metal. So he wasn't able to crank the first one out until 1951.
But now, is that who Perkins did eventually incorporated him into?
They worked in conjunction with he started with them.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I apologize. How embarrassing. I can't think of his name.
And is there a Braille writer museum?
Perkins has one. In fact, people have mailed me some really, really old, not necessarily Perkins, Banks made one, a little what they called a pocket Braille writer.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And it was designed to just Braille on little, like almost like ticker tape little strips of paper. You wanted to write a phone number.
But hold it right there. Just stop right there. My brother had one. Do you have one?
I've had a couple of them and had really no interest in acquiring a museum, so I sent them down to Perkins. They have a museum there.
But they don't make those anymore. No. Okay, my brother had one, and I don't know how it got away, but he had one that you could, and it was like Dymo tape.
Yeah.
Really?
And it had the little keys, the six little keys.
Yeah.
And you would press it. Yeah, it was clever.
It was
kind of like people carried the pocket slates around to do notes, you know. You had little.
It was a very clever idea.
I wonder if Susie uses a Braille. She's the fastest Brailler I know. She writes with a tablet and stylus when she's on the...
I bet she can do a Braille writer,
too.
She can
do a Braille writer? We'll have to ask her.
We'll have to ask her.
Have to talk to her about that.
Well, when I first started this, I could not do anything. I'd watch my wife on a Braille writer, and I'd say, oh, my God, I can never imagine writing that quickly.
Yeah.
And my wife would watch me on a slate and stylus and basically say the same thing.
Well, I agree.
But I've gotten fast enough now through testing them all that I can write the alphabet really quickly.
But as far as writing...
You know, thinking about words and everything, no, I'm completely lost.
What does your wife, you said your wife uses your Braille writer every day. What does she do?
She's a social worker. She works at the lighthouse.
And so she writes reports or she writes what?
She'll take notes. She'll take, you know, case notes. She'll take down phone numbers when she does interviews.
Does she prefer her Braille writer over the new? I mean, surely she's got a Braille note or a talk and speak or something similar or no?
No.
Okay.
She prefers a Braille writer.
Well, you know, I had a student who's now in second year of university and doing quite well, a student, but boy, we had to fight her to get her Brailler away. We finally got her on a Braille note. We kept saying, it's making too much noise. Yes. Quit it. You know, but anyway, she just had a fit. I want my writer and I want it now.
Well, that is the biggest drawback to the Braille writers. They make a lot of noise.
And I can hear my brother sitting back there listening to that tape. That what they would do for him, they would record his, that's back when radio, you read live commercials. And his secretary at Kite would read the commercials to him, and he would sit there in his Braille writer, and he could type as fast as she read.
Yes.
Her name was Ruth Schenkel. I'll never forget her as long as I live. She would, and he'd sit there. You could hear him, boy. You know, quit that. I'm trying to sleep. No, you know.
And they've come up with those pads, Braille writer, and everything.
Yeah.
And it absorbs a lot of the sounds.
Yeah, I remember those pads that you set the Braille writer on.
Yeah, they're about an inch and a half thick.
Yeah,
footprint of the Braille writer.
Well, Paul, you ought to repair an extra few Braille writers. You're not on any of our lists, but you and your wife ought to join us in Houston for our gathering in November.
October.
It is October. Last weekend in October.
It's in October. We're going to record the 250th Blind Handyman Show.
Oh, my.
And a bunch of us are going to get there. There'll be about 50 blind people down there. And you won't be asked to sign anything. There'll be no, you won't have to do any political. You won't have to give any money. Just show up and have a good time.
Is there a phone number where we can reach you for that?
My phone number, let me give your email address again. Maybe we can write that down, and I'll send you the information.
Absolutely fabulous. My email address is pjackanin, JACKANIN, at nyc.rr.com.
I got the nyc.rr.com.
All right, if you got that, we'll get a hold of you and send you the information. I'd love to meet you, sir. You ought to come to Houston
be great.
In October. It's great fun.
It would be my now for how long? How long is it?
It's just over a weekend. We come in on Friday, we party Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday, and then we go home. And we don't do any lectures or speeches.
Right.
All we're going to do is record Blind Handyman. We're going to do Dale Campbell's Cooking in the Dark and eat food and cook food. And we're going to do a Blind Like Me show. We're going to play a lot of live music. Do you play an instrument?
No, I don't.
Well,
I do not have that gift.
Come and listen to us.
But we're going to, I mean, encouraging people to kind of do, like Phil even put in, if you wanted to do poetry or something, so you could get a brief demonstration on the Braille.
Whatever
writer
you can do, yeah.
My goodness, it sounds great.
Yeah.
I'll send you the information, sir, and look forward to seeing you in October.
Gentlemen, I have appreciated this greatly.
All right, thank you, Paul, and I'll
thank
talk
you
to you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
What a guy. What a guy. Seems to be
what a deal.
Having the best time of his life.
Oh, yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Just having fun repairing Braille writers.
Yeah.
I can't imagine doing that every day.
God, if he's doing 25 a week, what
yeah
the hell?
Yeah, that's pretty
I'm
cool.
he's making a buck or two if he's doing 25
a week.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
I'm proud of him.
I am, too.
Another successful story heard from. There's millions of them out there.
Oh, there is.
That's,
yeah,
that's another guy that invented himself a job.
That's
he
right
doesn't need us.
He did not depend on the commission. He didn't depend on the blind school. He didn't depend on anybody. He invented himself a job. And oftentimes, a blind person has to do that to be able to survive.
But
that's
as
true
he so aptly stated, the property owner with whom he sleeps may have given him a boot in the butt. Since he squirted, since he squirted his, hers with WD-40.
Screwed up her blind,
yeah,
wire.
Since he squirted,
yeah,
hers,
really,
with WD-40,
yeah,
he may have gotten a little incentive.
All right, we're going. We'll see you. Don Pat, Don Shaw, thank you much. I'm Phil Park. I see, said the blind man as you pick up his hammer and saw.